The second case on our docket is 20-20535, Rio versus City of Houston. Mr. Riddle. Ms. Riddle, excuse me.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Molly Riddle for Appellant Anthony Barilla. Dismissing Mr. Barilla's case for lack of standing goes against well-established precedent, both of the Supreme Court and of this court. From Babbitt in 1979 to Speech First v. Finvis decided just last fall, federal courts have consistently applied relaxed standing rules in First Amendment cases seeking prospective relief. The court below subjected Mr. Barilla's case to a heightened pleading standard by dismissing his claim because he did not allege that he was cited or threatened with a citation for violating the challenge ordinances. However, a plaintiff need not expose himself to prosecution to challenge a law that infringes on speech. His allegations that the ordinances have chilled his speech and thus caused him to self-censor are sufficient to establish an injury. In 2018, the city accepted his fee for a permit to play in the theater district, but now it claims that he lacks standing to challenge the very regulatory scheme under which the permit was issued. Moreover, Mr. Barilla alleges that the challenge ordinances constitute a content-based restriction on speech, as well as a prior restraint that is not narrowly tailored to a compelling state interest. These allegations are not only sufficient, but they are likely to prevail on the merits. Turning to whether Mr. Barilla has standing, the only element of injury that is disputed here is whether he has alleged a threat of future enforcement that is substantial. In Speech First, the court reaffirmed the rule that chilling a plaintiff's speech is a constitutional harm adequate to satisfy the injury in fact requirement. When a chilling effect is alleged, no history of past enforcement is required under this court's precedent. That is because in a facial pre-enforcement challenge to a non-moribund statute that facially restricts the plaintiff's speech, courts will assume a credible threat of prosecution in the absence of compelling contrary evidence. And this assumption is based on that the threat is latent in the existence of the statute. The idea is that these relaxed standing rules give a citizen whose speech might otherwise be chilled by fear of sanction to prospectively seek relief. And courts, both the Supreme Court and this court, have adopted this rule to not put a plaintiff in a position where he must expose himself to penalty in order to bring suit, because to do so puts a plaintiff between the Scylla of intentionally flouting the state law and the Charybdis of foregoing what he believes is constitutionally protected speech. And what's an important check on this rule is to ensure that the ordinances are not moribund. The ordinances challenged here are not moribund for a few reasons. For one, the city enforced the permit requirements whenever they accepted Mr. Barilla's permit application. They accepted his $50 fee and they issued him a permit. Also, the city has not disavowed an intention to enforce the ordinances in this litigation. And when a state has not disavowed any intention of invoking a law, plaintiffs are not without some reason in fearing prosecution. The court held that in Babbitt.
Do you need the presumption? Because I agree, they don't seem to be saying these are moribund. Is there anything that you have showing substantial threat, regardless of whether you get the presumption?
Your Honor, I think that the fact that the city enforced the permit requirement is evidence that wouldn't require the presumption. I do believe that under the law, even absent that evidence, that his chill is reasonable here. But a second, you know, another theory of it is that the permit, the fact that they enforced that shows that his fear is credible without the presumption.
What if they say that pool and free speech or political speech cases, those are different? Did you have a standing case? Because the Ninth Circuit didn't really address standing. Do you have a standing case to say there's no distinction among First Amendment expressive activity?
I would say that in Speech First, in their standing analysis, they cite Houston Chronicle v. City of League City, and that case did not involve a political speech issue. That would involve an ordinance that was regulating the solicitation for the sale of newspapers, and that same chill analysis applied there, despite political speech not being an issue. I don't think that there's any basis in the case law to say that different standing rules apply based on the different kinds of speech at issue.
Wasn't one of his main concerns the fact that he didn't want to confront or request permission from the businesses that he would be performing in front of?
Your Honor, yes. The provision, in order to have a complete permit application, you had to get permission from the abutting property owners of the public property where you'd be playing. And he found it very burdensome in the permit process to find those and obtain that permission. And he also believes that giving that discretion to property owners violated his First Amendment rights.
Do giving the discretion to agree or not?
Correct.
I'm curious, I mean, predicate question, do you know of any authority that says that if we reverse on standing, we can also reach and validate that you have a plausible claim?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. They are cited in the briefs. I believe it's Nolasco and Melendez. There are two Fifth Circuit sites that say even if the district court dismiss on subject matter jurisdiction on appeal, you can reach the 12B6 argument as well.
But in your favor or?
That, Your Honor, I'm not. I would assume that it's in the court's discretion that it can. I mean, if I wouldn't, I don't believe that it would turn on whether or not it's in the party that's opposing the 12B6 motion.
I thought we could affirm on any ground, but I hadn't found myself a case that would let us reach. But anyway, that's secondary to the standing question. You obviously, both of you know this area of law a lot. Is there any circuit authority you would point to say this is what a city can do to regulate panhandling and busking? Are you comfortable giving us what's an example of a time, place, and manner that is legitimate?
Sure. I would say that, of course, the burden would be on the city to come up with those. It would be a content neutral time, place, and manner restriction. So an example would be a place that you can't busk within X feet of the entrance of a door, or it could be a sound limitation where you can't play above a certain decibel for noise. So those would be some examples of content neutral options, which are not what are at issue here, where whether or not Houston's busking ordinances apply, it turns specifically on whether you're playing combined with asking for money at the same time. And so we discussed the standing issue a little bit, but just to elaborate on that some, I'd also point the court to the declaration. It's on page 184 of the record, and that was a declarant who contacted plaintiff's counsel after this lawsuit was filed, asking what our position was on whether or not he was permitted to busk. He wasn't sure, given the law, and he had said that he had been shut down, actually, whenever he was busking on a public sidewalk outside of a park. And so we have his declaration there, and I think that's further evidence that supports Mr. Barilla's fear, that his fear of enforcement is substantial here. I also say that the city cites no case in which the court held that a plaintiff didn't have standing because the law was moribund. I think that demonstrates how low the bar is in a First Amendment case for a plaintiff to show a credible threat of enforcement. And moving on, turning to whether or not Mr. Barilla has stated a viable First Amendment claim, his allegations in his complaint allege that busking is a protected First Amendment activity. The city doesn't dispute that. He alleges that Houston's public sidewalks are public forums. The city also doesn't dispute that. And he alleges that this is a content-based restriction, which the city does dispute. And I've touched on it already, but the reason being that whether or not this law applies to him is triggered on its face. The ordinances are content-based. It's triggered on what the content of his speech is.
Is our decision in Society of Krishna a difficulty for you or not?
Your Honor, I don't have that at the top of my mind
Well, a related case, I guess, would be, are you familiar with Judge Afric's decision in a case called Blitch, B-L-I-T-C-H?
That, I am not familiar with that either. I apologize.
Right.
Okay.
What's the comparator? In other words, who is the speaker that's being treated more favorably? Is it singers inside the commercial establishments, or is it singers who are not asking for money?
Well, you can play your instrument, and that is permitted, or you can solicit money. That is permitted. It's when you combine the two activities that you're prohibited from doing so. So it's the specific activity of playing while soliciting a tip.
And it has to take place in the theater district, right? It's restricted to that area.
Yes, Your Honor. So busking is prohibited throughout the city. There's an exception within the theater district. And to perform there, you must obtain a permit. That also includes a permit application. You must have permission from the abutting property owners in order to get a permit. Okay. And so given that he alleges that these are content-based restriction, he alleges that they are subject to strict scrutiny and that these do not serve a compelling interest and they're not tailored, even assuming a compelling interest, was here. And I believe that his allegations are supported by the case law. I think Berger v. City of Seattle is the most analogous case that supports his allegations that this would violate the First Amendment. Also, Young v. Sarles out of the DC District Court, there the court granted a preliminary injunction on the grounds that a law that prohibited busking was a content-based regulation. They found it likely would fail scrutiny there. And that was another case where the musicians, they could play, but they couldn't open their guitar case. So that's what it turned on. It turned on once you started soliciting that you were prohibited. And finally, I would point out Goldstein v. Town of Nantucket. There, it was a street performer who they had a permit and they had to obtain the permission of property owners. And the court found that it was irreconcilable with freedom of expression, unqualified censorship, and just what the First Amendment forbids. So with that, I think that both his allegations combined with the case law that is cited, it states that he has stated a claim and that is sufficient to overcome the 12B6 motion. So if there are no further questions, then I will save my remaining time for rebuttal.
Mr. Higginson.
May it please the court, I'm Robert Higginson for the City of Houston. And I feel like first thing I should address is my failure to respond to the last issue. Council didn't bring that up, but I think that I probably need to. And if the court tells me just forget it, move on, it's fine, I will. But there was an issue that we have waived any objection we have to Barilla's issue about abuse of discretion not to grant leave to amend, to deny leave to amend. It was a mistake on my part to an oversight to not respond to that in the brief. I believe, however, that that mistake isn't automatically fatal. And the for a couple of reasons. One, the appellant, Mr. Barilla, has the burden of persuasion on that issue as well as the others. And another, this court follows the law. Even if I were to incorrectly cite law, the court would follow the correct law. And the authorities provided by Mr. Barilla do not require the outcome that he seeks on leave to amend. A couple of reasons that the leave to amend should, oh, first of all, why I didn't waive this. Barilla has cited some cases that say even an appellee can waive an argument. Two of those are from other circuits. Two of them are from Fifth Circuits, but those really deal with appellants, not appellees. I did some more research on this and found one Fifth Circuit argument that said that the appellee in that case waived the argument, but the appellee in that case was seeking affirmative relief, and found another that says in these exact words, an appellee cannot waive an argument. Garcia v. Holder.
Mr. Higginson, I have some difficulties with the district court standing analysis, so that's sort of a threshold issue. Difficult for me to see how the district court, and she had no hearing here, and she gives a paragraph of analysis, and it looks to me she just got Supreme Court and Fifth Circuit long wrong. She expected there had to be a citation or an arrest. I'm not exactly sure what your counter argument is. Are you saying those are political speech cases and there is a some other standard? Or are you saying the law is not one you would enforce against the plaintiff here? It's moribund and therefore no. What's your argument as to that?
I'm not aware of this being moribund. Perhaps it is, but I can't take that position. I can't represent that to the court. I think that my understanding from Ward versus Ward versus Rock against Racism, that musical performances, more so than direct political speech, are subject to time, place, and manner restrictions. Now, counsel has properly noted in a reply brief that that also does apply to other types of speech, and so you get into strict scrutiny or intermediate scrutiny or just a rational relation. However, a musical performance might have political content might not have political content, but that's not an issue in these ordinances. These ordinances are based upon concerns about nuisance from noise up against the abutting property owners. I apologize. It's so hot in this room. I took my jacket off earlier and I just now realized I didn't put it back on. I hope I look more
appropriate. No, we were just having audio problems. It wasn't your outfit. But maybe just instead of reaching tiers of scrutiny and content neutrality, just give me your best case to support that they're lack standing here.
Well, I think Younger v. Harris, that he hasn't really shown any imminent harm here or any real threat of harm. I think that there are other issues and grounds for dismissing the case, of course, that haven't really been dealt with here so far, because the judge just dismissed on standing, but the court could affirm on the other grounds as well, you know, statute of limitations, for example, and not just from when Mr. Brilla became aware of this statute, but from when it was passed in 1991. If he's going to do a declaratory judgment act to challenge the validity of the statute, then that would have begun in 1991 when the ordinance, not statute, the ordinance was passed. And it would have been either the 2-year or the 4-year, let's say the 4-year limitations period. And so that would have expired in 1995. Now, if in fact he were to get cited and fined, then he would have standing to challenge that. But
isn't that proposition exactly contrary to the Supreme Court Steffel decision?
Well, I don't think so, because if you're talking about political speech, then that is so fundamental. That is, and we know that music is important and it's essential to humanity. And I might really enjoy Mr. Brilla's performances myself. I don't know. I hadn't heard him, but it's all terrific. But foundational to the protections that we have in America, political speech is the most fundamental. And musical performances, yes, they are. But they're subject to more regulation than overtly, explicitly political speech is. But here again, this is
not addressing the standing. I think Judge Higginson was asking you specifically about standing.
Well, he doesn't have standing if he doesn't have an imminently threatened harm. And he hasn't shown that here. And
but you guys, he had to get a permit as recently as 2018.
That's true. Yes. But this is a permit to regulate nuisances, not a permit for what he can say.
I'm not hearing you very well.
I'm sorry. This is a permit to regulate nuisances or to restrict or eliminate nuisances, not a permit for what he can say. If for example, if he wanted to just ask people for money without any performance and do so quietly, he could do that in a lot of places. There are some regulations against doing that in the street, but there are a lot of places he could do it. If he wants to just perform, this ordinance doesn't restrict him from performing. And I understand that counsel's objection is that once you combine the performance with the request for money, that combination, according to Mr. Brilla's argument, is what makes it content-based. I don't believe so. Here's why, and I can't tell you that I have a specific authority either, but here's the rationale. If someone is just performing, they might become a nuisance. And if that happens a whole lot, then that might have to be dealt with after people complain. However, if people are performing for money, it's reasonable. This may not be proven, but this is reasonable to believe that they will be there longer because they're getting paid to be there if they are successful at it. And they may draw a crowd the longer they stay. This might become more of a nuisance to the abutting property owners. This is set out in the preamble of the ordinance, not in exactly these words, but a recognition that that bands and performers and noise can be a nuisance. Now, the fact that the noise is musical might or might not make it less of a nuisance, but it doesn't make it content-based if they're staying there longer. And for someone to be there with a guitar case open soliciting funds might be suggesting that they're going to be staying there as long as they can, as long as they have money coming in. If they're there just passing by, they may not be there as long. Now, this is just a rationale that I'm offering. I can tell Judge Higginson that I haven't answered your question, and perhaps I haven't even come close. I'd be happy to try.
Well, I guess you sort of have, if you've acknowledged that he's covered, he's a performer, so it's not just bands. You're not denying that England, and you're acknowledging it is an ordinance that's enforced. It's not moribund. But I do have to tell you, just so you can answer it, that would seem to me to trigger a pretty predictable standing analysis. There has to, you know, you've got a credible threat and you haven't rebutted it. That's just how I'm thinking about the case.
Well, Your Honor, I think that maybe the difference here is that I don't see it as chilling to the level of a violation, because he's provided about a 30 block area in which he can do this. Now, at one point it may be described as 17 blocks. If you look at the map and count them, I counted them, the area that's outlined by the specified in the ordinance. If you look at that, it's about 30 or 32 blocks. Granted, right now during the pandemic, nobody's there. All those places are closed. This is not a good time to be doing it. But when that's over, it should be a pretty good place. But I think what Mr. Barilla is asking for is a wide open freedom to do this anywhere he chooses, anywhere he pleases. I think that's what he's asking. That would mean that the city, no city, would be able to regulate time, place, and manner of where someone is performing. And I don't think that that's really where the law has gone.
Okay, thank you. You've answered all my questions, counsel. Okay.
And if there are no other questions, I can let it go with this.
Okay.
And Ms. Riddle, rebuttal?
Thank you. Just a few quick points on rebuttal. Opposing counsel brought up the statute of limitations defense that they asserted, and I think there's two reasons why that doesn't bar Mr. Barilla's claim. The Fourth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit have held that a statute of limitations defense can never bar, or have expressed doubts that a statute of limitations defense will ever bar a facial First Amendment claim, as well as there's the continuing injury theory, in which that every day that Mr. Barilla's First Amendment rights are violated, it resets the limitations period on his injury. So I don't think that bars his claims here. Also, I want to emphasize, the city says in their briefs that the purpose that they allowed for busking to occur in the theater district, it was in an effort to revitalize the downtown area. They thought that busking would make the environment a more desirable place and attract pedestrians there. And so to say that, busking is a nuisance, that isn't consistent with that. You know, it was thought that this would be an attraction to the downtown area. And in saying that the theater district, no one is there right now, that's exactly why Mr. Barilla wants the broader prohibition to be lifted. People are spending an unprecedented amount of time outside right now. It's actually the ideal time to be busking, but you have to be where people are. And the downtown area is primarily businesses. And while people are still working from home, you want to go to the places like restaurants and things like that where people are frequenting them. And so with that, I would say too, when opposing counsel was asked about the best authority for standing, he said Younger v. Harris. I'm not aware of that being in the briefing, so I can't respond to that. But those are my points, and there are no further questions. I would ask that this court reverse and remand this case for further proceedings.
Thank you, counsel. We have your arguments. And that will conclude the cases before this panel this week. The cases from this week are under submission. Thank you.